It's Scott with you on Thursday, March 5th, and I am reading from the Plymouth Independent some current stories. This one is entitled Prospective Costco Gas Station Decision Delayed by Zoning Board, and it's written by Michael Cohen, Plymouth Independent correspondent. As Plymouth and Kingston jockey for position in the race to attract a new Costco store, the owner of the potential Plymouth site hoped a green light from the town to build a gas station on its land would accelerate it into the lead. But faced with opposition from some residents and the owner of the mobile gas station across the street, the Plymouth Zoning Board of Appeals pumped the brakes on Monday night on the application of T.L. Edwards Incorporated, which wants to build a gas station and convenience store at the corner of Cherry Street and Commerce Way, the entry point for its gravel yard and rock crushing operation that's visible from Route 44. The delay points to the long road ahead for customers who may want to shop for bulk bargains at the popular Warehouse Club store, since it will likely be several years before a new Costco is permanently permitted and built at either site. "We have two attorneys setting us up for a lawsuit, and I've had enough of lawsuits," said Zoning Board member Edward Conroy, who ultimately moved to delay action on the gas station permit so the board could gather more information about the case. The two attorneys both cited technical problems with the required notification of direct neighbors and the general public who may want to weigh in on the proposal. More substantively, both the attorney representing concerned citizens and the mobile station asked for an independent third-party engineering review of the site plan. They want to ensure compliance with local and state regulations because a portion of the site falls within the state's water protection zone and the town of Plymouth's aquifer protection district. Three public water supply wells are within the protection zone. Two Kingston wells are next to the mall property, about 2,000 feet from the T.L. Edwards site. One Plymouth Municipal well is about two-thirds of a mile to the south in the industrial park on the other side of Route 44. Allowing this prohibited use recklessly exposes the Plymouth drinking water supply to risk of contamination, said Valerie Moore, who's an attorney for the gas station and convenience store at 131 Commerce Way, which is not within the water protection zone. Eric Shoemaker, the project engineer for T.L. Edwards, walked the board through the site plan, showing that the proposed gas pumps and storage tanks are not within the water protection zone, but other parts of the project are, including the underground stormwater collection system. Shoemaker said a review by the Plymouth Department of Public Works, which prompted several refinements, including installation of monitoring wells to check for any impact on the groundwater, found the gas station plan in compliance with the water protection regulations. But Moore disagreed, arguing state law requires the entire site to comply with the tighter restrictions of the water protection zone. She said, "This site straddles the aquifer protection district, which precludes new fuel tanks of this size. In Massachusetts, when a property is split zoned, like this one, if a use is not allowed in one of the districts within that property, but is allowed in the other district, then the more restrictive use applies to the entire property." Kingston and Plymouth have both been courting Costco for over a year now. Both communities changed the zoning of the proposed sites to accommodate the development. Kingston lifted a long-standing moratorium on new connections to its water supply. Now the question of the best place to build a Costco gas station has become a central point of contention. In Kingston, the main Costco club is planned for the shuttered Macy's department store site at the old Kingston Collection Mall. But building an associated gas station near the club is complicated by the proximity of two of the town's drinking water wells. There is a water protection zone around those wells prohibiting a gas station or other uses because of the risk of contamination to the groundwater. To get around the water protection zone, Kingston Town Meeting last April approved a land swap between the town and the mall owner exchanging parcels to create just enough land to squeeze in a gas station next door to the town's fire station on the approach road to the mall. Most of the site is outside of the water protection zone, but it would not be the typical model for Costco's gas stations, which are generally much closer to the main wholesale club and accessed by the same parking lot to accommodate the often long lines for its celebrated low prices on gasoline. William Sims, who is the attorney for T.L. Edwards and who was not at the ZBA hearing, emphasized that the proposed gas station in Plymouth is not in the water protection zone and would be further away from the Kingston Wells than the potential site near the Kingston Fire Station. Plus, building the gas station on the gravel yard site would be integrated with a Costco parking lot. Sims said, "We are competing with the Kingston Collection, and we hope Costco will like our site." Florida-based Second Horizon Capital, which is the owner of the Kingston Mall, declined a request from the Plymouth Independent to be interviewed for this story or to answer specific questions sent by email. Instead, the company sent a statement to the Independent, which said, "Mall redevelopment is a significant undertaking. We remain committed to the long-term repositioning and transformation of Kingston Collection. Additional details will be shared as plans progress." Whether the development ultimately lands in Kingston or Plymouth, not much would change for future customers or employees of a new Costco, since the competing sites are only about a half a mile apart, just as easy to shop or work at either location. The big difference for the towns is the prospect of about $250,000 in property tax revenue. The newest Costco in the region opened last year in the town of Sharon. It's a wholesale club and gas station assessed at almost $25 million. The Costco in Dedham, which also has a gas station, was built in 1997 and is assessed at almost $19 million. The Costco in Avon, which was built in 1991, does not have a gas station and is assessed for more than $10 million. In Plymouth, the BJ's Club and gas station off Long Pond Road was built in 2004. It is assessed at $17.5 million. A $20 million assessed value for a new Costco and gas station would translate to $256,400 in annual real estate taxes for Kingston, or $251,000 for Plymouth at current rates. It could roughly triple the revenue the towns currently receive from those sites. Meanwhile, the land swap with Kingston approved at town meeting hasn't been finalized, and no applications related to a potential Costco have been filed in Kingston. "I hope we see some activity this spring," said Kingston Town Administrator Scott Lambiasi. "With these kinds of projects, typically they would want to do some due diligence, soil borings and that sort of thing, to see what they could actually do on that site before moving ahead." The Plymouth Zoning Board of Appeals will continue its review of the gas station project on April 27th at a 6 p.m. meeting at Town Hall. "Nothing is agreed to and nothing has been signed, but we continue to have serious discussions with Costco and would love to have them in Plymouth," Sims said. Costco posted $269.9 billion in sales in 2025 from its 914 clubs located around the world. It opened 24 new clubs in 2025. The company doesn't comment on possible locations until they are within 3 months of opening. The next story from this edition of the Plymouth Independent is entitled, "The $6 million buses may prompt huge change." A study found it may soon be cheaper to switch from private contractors to a public fleet. It's written by Independent staff reporter Fred Tice. As the price of hiring private bus contractors to transport students through Plymouth's sprawling geography now exceeds $6 million per year, public school officials are considering taking over the service. It's the first time Plymouth public school officials have put so much consideration into such an enormous move, one which would put the burden on taxpayers to buy a fleet of buses, hire drivers, and manage the new service. The bus contract is up at the end of June, leaving officials in a quandary about how to move forward, said the district's business director, Adam Blaisdell. There is a lot to it, he said. You have to buy a fleet of buses. You have to maintain them all yourself. Then you have to incur all the HR work that goes into hiring about 80 people. Last year, the Plymouth school system hired a consultant to conduct a feasibility study and compare the costs and headaches of running its own bus service through the largest geographical school district in Massachusetts. That report found transportation costs increased by a whopping 47% from the 2018-19 school year to the 2024-25 school year. The report also found the cost to Plymouth to run its own school buses would exceed the cost of contracting it out by more than $303,000 a year. However, the report also predicted the upward trend in contract costs, which means the schools could soon reach a tipping point at which it would be cheaper to run the service itself. Only two private bus companies have bid to take over the contract in July. First Student, the current contractor, and NRT Bus. The bids are confidential until the final choice is made. If the Plymouth School Board decides to keep the privately contracted service, it has the option to continue the current contract for another year. Every day, 65 Plymouth school buses travel a total of 4,200 miles. They transport almost 5,500 students daily, 4,400 regular students, 300 special education students, 435 vocational technical students, 236 charter students, and 89 students without homes or who live in foster care. The $6 million figure represents what it will cost this year to transport the 4,800 students who take yellow school buses. The schools are paying $499.83 per bus per day, Blaisdell said, or $89,969 per 180-day school year. That puts Plymouth in the middle of the pack. The town of Bedford pays $538 a day per bus, Middleborough, $517, Chelmsford, $481, and Norwood, $480. Worcester, Framingham, and Randolph are among the schools already operating their own school transportation, according to the Massachusetts Association of School Business Officials. Typically, students whose individualized education plan requires specialized transportation, students who are without homes, and students who are in foster care are transported in vans, which are more expensive than the larger yellow buses. Because the number of students without homes can fluctuate overnight, the schools sometimes must scramble for van transportation and have had to pay as much as $600 to $900 a day to transport each student, Blaisdell said. He added that Plymouth's costs are complicated by its geography. Because the town, at over 100 square miles, is the state's largest by area, students can take long routes to get to school. And the state does not reimburse large area towns like Plymouth for their outsized cost of transportation. Like all school districts, Plymouth is required by state law to provide transportation to all students. In part because the routes are so long and Plymouth's students are so spread out, the buses often make fewer stops and carry fewer students, so they can get to schools on time. One recent morning, buses arriving at the Rising Tide Public Charter School carried between 6 and 10 students on average, with some buses carrying just a single student. Rising Tide is not alone. Last year, Plymouth South High School and Plymouth North High School each had a bus that transported just 5 students. That's according to the 2025 study commissioned by the public schools to help them decide whether to take over bus transportation. Two students interviewed by The Independent seemed satisfied with the quality of the service. Ninth grader Patrick McPherson, who attends the Rising Tide Public Charter School, gets on the number 28 school bus just outside the Pine Hills at 6:50 a.m. each school morning. Bus drivers, he said, are super nice. They're always there on time. It's a good experience. Cassidy Maciel, who's a senior living on Bourne Road near the Ponds of Plymouth in South Plymouth, gets on the same bus even earlier at 6:36 a.m. The bus drops them off at school between 7:15 and 7:20. Maciel and McPherson are among 17 students that take the 28 bus along one of the longest routes in Plymouth by time. It takes 43 to 48 minutes over its 33-mile run from Bourne and Gunning Point Roads in South Plymouth to Rising Tide. Plymouth is very large, explained Blaisdell. It's got a lot of roadways, and sometimes it can take an extended period of time to go from school to the farthest point in Plymouth. Each bus must make three trips twice a day, carrying high school students first, then middle and elementary school students. Under its contract with First Student, the town must pay for all three trips, no matter how few students are on each trip. So, it doesn't save us any more if we say your high school route doesn't have that many kids on it. Don't do it, Blaisdell said. We still have to pay. As a result, the high school buses, the buses with the longest routes because they cover the largest territories, are not as full, and the elementary school buses, those with the shortest routes because they cover the most compact areas, are the fullest. High school afternoon buses have even fewer students because many stay at school for sports and other activities. And then there are those distances, more than 400 miles of roads. It requires a lot of buses to pick up the students and to do it on time. Blaisdell said that if you ever had to drive from South High School to Buttermilk Bay and then try to make it back to South Middle School, just you driving without stopping, think of a bus where you have to stop every so often to let kids off. It is a trip taking 45 minutes, even without stops. But 45 minutes is all the time it has, including stops, Blaisdell said. Buses leave South High School at 2:05 p.m. and must be at South Middle School by 2:40. Some are inevitably late, arriving at 3. If you make it, you're lucky, Blaisdell said. But if you start dropping kids off along the way, you don't make it in time for the next dismissal. Each bus can't have too many students aboard, so it can get to the next school on time. School Superintendent Chris Campbell said the schools are now in confidential negotiations with a preferred bidder. He predicted that the school committee could take up the matter in April. This story is headlined, "For Once, All Things Plymouth Was More Than an Online Cage Fight." The popular Facebook page served as a community gathering place during the recent blizzard. It's written by Mark Pothier of the Independent staff. Facebook's All Things Plymouth page can feel more like a toxic waste site than community gathering place. With a purported 150,000 members, exceeding by 2 times the total of every adult and child in town, it's often a steaming cauldron of bad grammar, stirring hate, ignorance, and racism. But the recent crippling blizzard showed All Things Plymouth and social media platforms like it can serve a productive purpose during times of crisis. Yes, rumors still did circulate, facts were embellished, lies were amplified, some people posed inane questions like, "Where can I get my dunks?" Others whined about slow DoorDash deliveries and exhausted Eversource workers taking a break. Meantime, posters with phony names peppered the page with missives that were solely targeted to provoke. The usual slop. But beyond the basement-dwelling dummies, chatbots, and trolls, there was evidence that All Things Plymouth may not indicate the end of times are upon us. There was, gasp, a level of compassion on display. People needing help used the page to connect with those who might be able to provide it. They commiserated and consoled. They passed on tidbits about power outage updates and unplowed streets. They offered tips on keeping the indoor temperature from plunging. Boiling water on a gas stovetop was a popular one. They helped reunite wandering pets with their human companions. They offered to shovel out people physically unable to do so. They thanked sleep-deprived plow operators instead of blaming them for the town's depleted resources. Be patient with town workers, one person wrote in response to a February 28 story from The Independent. They're out today pushing the mounds back and widening the streets. Another wrote, hats off to the front-end loader operator that widened the Martingale neighborhood. He did a great job, not blocking driveways or mailboxes. Multiple exchanges were about navigating narrowed roads. Does anyone know if Old Sandwich Road from Clifford down toward Sacrifice Rock Road headed into the Pine Hills has been widened? Some asked on Monday. A response? It's passable with patience. Give yourself extra time and go slow. Or stop and wait till it's clear to go around the icy parts. They're very bumpy. One inquiry quickly brought offers of assistance. Does anyone know of plows available for one pass tonight? We haven't been able to reach ours, and I'm pregnant and hoping to get out to a relative's house that has power. Any recommendations would be appreciated. More than a few posts were about solving problems with finicky generators. One told an especially uplifting story. My 8-month-old grandson recently came home from the NICU with a tracheostomy and on a vent 24/7. We purchased a generator in the event we lost power, as we needed to be sure we could power all his equipment. Unfortunately, we'd never used a generator before and were starting to get low on fuel. While we were shoveling the driveway so we could get out, a woman across the street dropped what she was doing and started to help us. She quickly realized this was going to take forever and proceeded to recruit other neighbors to assist. Soon, we had several of our neighbors with snowblowers in our driveway working hard to be sure we could get to a gas station. We don't know what we would have done without these kind neighbors that gave up everything they needed to do for themselves to be sure my grandson was safe. Someone with a sharp eye found a car key fob in the snow near Town Hall and turned it in. Near them, there was a fresh envelope with a birth certificate in it for Emily, they wrote. If you lost either one of those, we dropped them off at Town Hall. And there was this urgent plea from a stranded resident. I'm looking to find someone who can help me. I'm snowed in. I live in Pinehurst Village. They haven't plowed the back of my house. I have COPD, and my husband has Parkinson's. Any suggestions who we could call for help? We need to get out. I have no problem walking through snow in your driveway to give you some food, someone answered. There are dozens of other examples of people acting neighborly during and after the storm, but like the ever-changing New England weather, all things Plymouth veers from one topic of the moment to another. By Monday afternoon, civility seemed to be melting like the snow in recent days. Oh well, maybe my flurry of optimism was nothing more than a blizzard-induced fever dream. I'll let you know after the next 100-year storm. And finally, here are some items from the Plymouth Independent Culture Calendar. The Plymouth Philharmonic Orchestra, which is led by conductor Stephen Karadayannis, will launch the audience into outer space, from the moon to Jupiter and beyond, in a concert titled Spaceship Earth at 3 p.m. on Sunday, March 8th, at Plymouth South High School. When Karadayannis began leading the orchestra more than 30 years ago, he inherited the first annual family concert. But in the last few years, the family concert was rebranded the Concert for All Ages. That gives grown-ups a free pass to come for the music without feeling the need for having a child in tow, he said. It's a great entree into the symphonic world. If you've never been to a concert before, come to this one, he suggested. Most of the pieces are short, between 5 and 8 minutes, so if you don't like one, you might enjoy the next one. Karadayannis said he's always been drawn to anything relating to space and space exploration. Growing up, he watched Star Trek and all the Star Wars movies and considers himself a big kid when it comes to anything related to space. The idea is, what can we do when we put our minds to it, he said, not just in the art world, but in the sciences. The concert will focus on pieces evoking outer space and or the planets, starting with The Jupiter from Gustav Holst's orchestral suite, The Planets. The audience will also hear songs from movies, the score by Michael Giacchino for Star Trek Into Darkness, and, of course, John Williams's Adventures on Earth from E.T. the Extraterrestrial. Karadayannis said he chose both pieces because, in both of cases, the music and the stories involve curiosity and discovery, whether about outer space or about our spaceship, Earth. Highlighting the concert, a local sixth grader, Annabelle Fuller, will read the children's book, The Astronaut with a Song for the Stars, The Story of Dr. Ellen Ochoa by Julia Finley Mosca. Karadianis wrote music to accompany the reading and said he patchwork quilted songs from Beethoven's Moonlight Sonata, Debussy's Clair de Lune, and the first variation of Mozart's Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star, all very familiar tunes. As a visual accompaniment, the book's illustrations by Daniel Riley will be projected above the orchestra. The book celebrates Dr. Ochoa, an astronaut, engineer, flautist, and former director of NASA's Johnson Space Center. She lives in Idaho and sent a short 45-second video, which will greet the audience. As a bonus, ticket holders can experience a pre-concert instrument demonstration with members of the orchestra starting at 2 p.m. in the Plymouth South High School cafeteria. People of all ages are welcome to test drive an instrument with musicians. The orchestra, which partners with Orchestras Feeding America, is inviting audience members to bring non-perishable food items to donate to the South Shore Community Action Council's Food Distribution Center. "We're trying to do as much good as we can with what we've got," Karadianis said. Tickets for the concert are $25 for adults, $12 for children 12 and under. That's the Plymouth Independent for this week. I'm Scott. It's been a pleasure to be with you.